og þá bara gefið þeim orðið. Takk.
Hi, I'm Peter. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to still be here and still sober. And thank for Chris and Myers for some really great talks. And once again, thank you guys for helping me feel so welcome. I'm supposed to do a little talk on this thing called spiritual experience. And, you know, before I get going, I don't know what happened to our fourth edition, and I really hope that AA is not going to try to become politically correct in this, in recovery. But the third edition, if you flip over on a little fly page here, it says, about two-thirds of the way down, but the basic text, pages 1 to 164, have remained unchanged. This is the AA message. So the question I have to ask myself, and we have to ask ourselves, what message are we carrying to the drunk who still suffers? And what is this message doing? Why do I need this message in my life? If I'm a real alcoholic dying of untreated alcoholism, why do this work? Why can't I just hang out? Why can't I just, you know, join a club somewhere? Why can't I just, you know, go to the gym and work out a lot? Why can't I just get a good tan or find the right mate to take me out of the throes of alcoholism, take me out of hell and set me on a path to freedom? Why do I need to do any of this work in a book? Why do we even need this book? What message am I getting to get to God, which is why I need this book? It's information that's going to take me to a God of my understanding, which is going to get me free. A lot of us take different paths, but it's about getting right. My experience has been with God, because God is the one who's going to set me free. He will do this for me. I heard it best by a gentleman who said, you know, the farmer plants and makes the ground fertile. God does the growing. A doctor performs a surgery. God does the healing. We need to show up with a spirit of willingness, willing to do anything, any lens. You know, if we knew what any lens looked like when it showed up, maybe we would have some reservations going in. But any lens is any lens, and any lens has showed up to be many different things over the last 14 years for me. But it was any lens because circumstances brought me to a place of I will do anything when that question was proposed to me by my sponsor. Will you go to any lens to recover? And I said, yeah. What were my alternatives? There were no more lurking notions, no reservations of any kind in me that maybe I can squeeze through again. I knew it was over. My next trip was to get to God by any means necessary. And this path in this book was a clear-cut, precise path to God. I mean, that's what this is about, isn't it? Getting awake from this God and then going to a drunk who's dying, who's blocked, and giving them this information or giving her this information so they can find this path and get right with their God and go back into the fellowship, and this is what happens. I spoke to some of you guys over the last couple of days. A few years ago, apparently none of this stuff was happening here. And now it's happening, and it's speaking volumes. And I really applaud all of you for doing this, because lives will be saved. Why? Because we're taking them through this book, and they're getting right with their God. One of the most powerful sentences in our big book is just a few simple words. Lack of power was our dilemma. Lack of power. And I have found that it is not only with alcohol. It's lack of power across the board with everything. We access power, and then we're suddenly not powerless anymore, are we? We have power to do great things, like pulling a drunk out of hell and helping them get recovered. Not recovering, not doing it. Could you imagine doing this deal a day at a time, holding on? Dr. Bob, there's a question, a statement by Dr. Bob. He says to a guy, quit drinking for good and all. That's forever. Chapter to Agnostics talks about quitting altogether. That's forever. We get recovered. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. We get this awakening on this path, and then we don't get free room and board in step 10. What we do is we continue to seek new experiences with this power. So what brings me to this power, these steps? Why do I show up? Because circumstances getting here brought me to a place of willing to go to any lens. There's great things that happen on the other side. It talks about we're building an arch which we were going to pass through a free man. It's not too pleasant going through that archway. There's a squeezing that goes on, and it is not comfortable. My current sponsor says, going through this work again, are you ready to have your entire life turned upside down on you? A complete overhaul. And guess what? After 14 years, I remember when I even approached this guy, you know, we talk about reemergence of ego in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't so sure. I says, well, things are uncomfortable, but not so uncomfortable. I'm ready to go through this complete revolutionary change again. But something deep down in here, that quiet voice, which is usually God, was saying, just trust this man and follow this path. Because the loud voice, which was up here, was saying, you don't really need to do this. See, one of the things that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous is this, and it's been my experience and watching experience of many others, is that we become a prey to comfortability. Well, what do I mean by that? We're around here a little while. We start to sponsor people. The wife lets us back in the bedroom. You know, the dog isn't barking at us when we come in. We get employed. When guys are new, they get new sneakers back home, and girls get manicures and hairdos. That's how you know they're new in Alcoholics Anonymous. So that stuff starts to happen, and we start to sponsor people. You know, we still have a sponsor, maybe a sponsor who's popular. We know where the coffee machine is. We know where the bathrooms are. We're greeting, and we kind of get into this thing. And things get good. We go through this work. Things get good. And then the illness says, you know what? You're doing great. Why don't you just kick back? And our book is really clear about resting on our laurels. Things get comfortable, and that can be a downfall. We become a prey to our comfortability. Why? Because we stop writing inventory. We stop doing prayer and meditation. Well, you know what? Chris will get that newcomer. I want to get home in time to watch TV tonight. Miles will get the newcomer. I'm too tired tonight. I had a rough day at work. They'll be taken care of, forgetting what it was like when I walked in a door looking for someone to help me and how important it was for me when I was on the other side saying, there's a new guy. My recovery depends on helping that guy get sober. What changed? How come in Alcoholics Anonymous, after a few years, any length is on my terms and not maybe someone else's terms, God's terms, or my sponsor's terms? What changed? Because I've gotten this thing they talk about, reemergence of ego, and I become a prey to comfortability. And trouble starts to happen. I've experienced some of that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's the other one. Well, I'm sober so long, so therefore I can get away with doing this. And you fill in the blank. And then it becomes really painful by doing stuff like that. And then we know we're in trouble, so we do this. I'm never going to do this again. Because I'm sober this long, I shouldn't be behaving this way. And then we find ourselves right back in it again. So I offer you this. How many times have we experienced strange mental blank spots in Alcoholics Anonymous sober in other areas of our life? Swearing we're never going to do something, and then we're right back in there again wondering how did this happen? Whether it be a fear spree, an anger spree, a sex spree, a food spree, whatever it is. Here I am again. How did this happen? Or we come out on the other end saying, what was that about? And I have a truckload of amends to make. I say all this for one reason, because we've been separated from the power again instead of integrated with the power and continuing to grow with it. See, what this work does, the spirit, sometimes I'll say the spirit is sick. What I truly mean is the spirit doesn't get sick. God don't get sick. You know, what happens is I become sick. I get blocked and I start to get untreated in here. And what a lot of this work does is kind of, there's this wedge between me and this power, and it's kind of just ripped out. And once it's taken out, with all the stuff we learn about in 4 through 4, 5, 6, 7, go out, make amends in 8 and 9, that stuff gets cleared out, and I become integrated with this God. I get free is what happens. But after cleaning up my amends, and I mean all the amends we're consciously aware of, not the ones that's convenient for me to work. Because that's, again, reemergence of ego, and that's just sheer arrogance that I'm running the show again. If I have a list of people I'm aware of, I better be going knocking on doors. You know how to work step 8? You knock on a door and go make amends in step 9. You know how you work step 3? You put pen to paper and work step 4. I mean, it's that simple. But I need to be doing this stuff. And not tell me, because self is what's going to get me in trouble. Not self tell me, you know what, Pete, you've been doing this a while. It's okay to kick back now. I need to continue after my amends to grow in understanding and effectiveness and experience new experiences with this God. I would go to meetings and hear people talking about God and ask them if they had gone through the steps or if they belonged to maybe some sort of religion or something, that they talking about this God like they had an experience with it, and they did none of it. And then I thought of my own experiences. And that has been this. I can believe in God, but having an experience with God is two different neighborhoods. I believe planes can fly. I flew on one getting here. I don't know how to fly planes. I have no experience. I know they fly. So believing in God, well, you say God works in your life. Okay, I see God work in your life, but I have no experience with that power. So I need to have an experience with this power. And you know what? If you have an experience with this book, I can tell you from my heart that you will have an experience with the God of your understanding. You have an experience with this book, you will have an experience with your God of your understanding. We don't need to find God a year sober. You know, one of the things I hear a lot is, get a sponsor, someone who has a year or more sobriety. And I sit back and say, well, what does that mean? Ebby showed up at Bill's door with about 2 months sober, got right with something, and knew he had to go pass this on to Bill. And Bill was drinking. Bill looked to get Ebby drunk. Ebby didn't say, well, I can't touch him because he's drinking. You know, he's a wet one. I got to leave this one alone. I'll get the nice upstanding drunk and go work with him. Ebby showed up in a sordid spot, Bill's living room, and went to work. He took this power and says, I got a drunk I need to go fix, and went to pass it on. Bill didn't get sober right away, but the seed was planted. Lots of times we think we're sponsoring people and they get drunk, it's our fault. No, it ain't. But you don't know the seed you planted. The same thing, we go to meetings and we ruffle a lot of feathers in passing this message in the book on. People will get up and walk out. You know, they'll start to yawn. They'll mumble under their breath. That's fine. Because some of those people, when they're dying, who are real alcoholics, will come back and say, you take me to this book because I need to find God. And that's what we're responsible for. I heard too many stories. Well, my own story. I would come to Alcoholics Anonymous, get lots of suggestions from people who meant well, but maybe weren't the real type like I am. And they would say, don't drink and go to meetings. Put the plug in a jug. Make 90 and 90. There's lots of coffee in the there's lots of sobriety in the coffee pot. So get a coffee commitment. I'm sober almost 15 years. I'm still looking for sobriety in a pot of coffee. I haven't seen it yet. But this is what they told me to do. I would come in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, in and out, like a revolving door. And I reached a place where I said, well, maybe AA don't work for me. What do I do now? But some people, as I said earlier, who are armed with the facts, gave me the information in this book and walked me through this book. And somewhere God happened. In Spiritual Appendix, page 569 in the third edition, it talks about spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. And he goes on to explain the difference between the two. Sometimes quickly, what Bill had the experience, sometimes slowly, the educational variety, what most of us have. But I will tell you this. From my own experience, when God shows up, God shows up, whether it's slow or quick. You know, you're going through this work and you're waiting for that burning bush to show up, and sometimes it doesn't happen that way. My experience has been this, that, you know, the fifth step promises, they talk about we're walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. We're on that broad highway. Fears fall from us. We fear the nearness of our creator. That stuff happened to me, not on my time schedule, not on my terms, but on God's. It happened. And I'm sure a lot of you guys can identify with this. You're going about your business, and suddenly you know God's there. You can just feel it. And if any words that I put to explain this fall short, silence makes more sense when we're trying to describe God. I remember telling my sponsor, trying to verbalize the words to tell him about my experiences with this power, and they were falling short. Anytime I talk on a topic like this, I always feel really inadequate about it, because how can I tell you about the love and power in God in my life without falling short? It's an impossible task to pull off here, but I'll do my best with this. I've been able to sponsor lots of people who come in, as Chris talked about earlier, broken with nothing and wondering what their life was going to turn into next. And you sit down with that person who the light in their eyes is out. You can just see it. And then you sit with them and you walk them through doctor's opinion. You walk them through the first few chapters and they find out about their truth. And they see that the power, the solution is in step two. Step one tells them they're drinking. They feel like, oh no, now you really pulled the bottom out on me. And then we say, no, step two is a solution. And they tell you, because I've done it, well, how do I get to that place? I don't believe like you believe. And our book is really clear in chapter to agnostic. I wish I can believe as that man believes, but a spirit of willingness is all this takes, a mustard seed of it. See, a spiritual experience begins with just a drop of willingness. That's all it takes to blow the doors wide open. And my own conception of God, no matter how inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. You don't need to believe like the guy who's maybe right with his God for a long time. God doesn't make too hard terms. My book is really clear on that. See, you will hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm living life on life's terms. Guess what? I blew that one. I failed. I still don't know how to live life on life's terms. That's too difficult, too painful, and it's always wrapped up with self. But life on God's terms, it's simple, it's easy. I suit up and show up and I get invited to wonderful places like this. I go home and be a husband to my wife. I go home and be a son to my dad. I be a brother to my brothers, and I try to be the most upstanding member in Alcoholics Anonymous. I fall short in every area, but God doesn't make too hard terms because I set right the wrongs that I make. Chapter to agnostic, if you're having this dilemma about this God stuff, you sit down and do some studying with this book with chapter 4, which is another thing. I've heard many people in AA say, well, I read the book so many times, and I sit back and ask them a question, well, what's your experience with this book? We read it like we read the newspaper, some of us. You know, cover to cover. I read it to cover. Like, that qualifies you to be a member in AA because you read the book from cover to cover. And they're really clear on that. Cover to cover. Big deal. I don't go into the back of the book too much because it's stories except for Dr. Bob. You know, if I want to read a drunkologue, I'll go hear one at most AA meetings. I need solution because I lack power. And if I think after being here 14 years that suddenly I am the power, I'm in trouble. If I wake up one morning and think I have choice, I am in serious trouble. That was removed from me. What this work allows me to do is access this power. The third step promises talk about principal, agent, director, father, child, employer, employee. Like a loving father, God is going to nurture me like any father would do with his son or daughter. And when they make mistakes, they're going to hold them in their arms and show them the right way to go. Not punish them, not banish them. An agent and a principal. Well, what's that about? My sponsor explained to me very clearly. A principal has power. The agent goes out and represents the principal. Michael Jordan is the principal. He has an agent, goes out and represents Michael Jordan. See, page 68 in our book talks about that God will demonstrate through us what he can do. That's an awful lot of responsibility and a whole lot of power. I mean, do you realize what that says in there? God will demonstrate through you and through you and through you what he can do. Now, I'm a drunk walking the door with absolutely nothing. All I can think about was the next drink and my life is in the toilet. And then we wake up. And then we come to page 68 and it says, God will demonstrate through me, Pete Marinelli, what he can do, that I'm in the world to play the role he assigns. This is great information from someone who was dying of alcoholism. And guess what? No one is not qualified in here to do that. God doesn't make too hard terms. It's roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive. We don't check you at the door. No one got checked at the door this morning. ID, you know. We didn't stamp your hand, you know. You got the wrong clothes on. When I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous in my home group or in Minnesota, no one said, well, you don't look right. You're a different color. You're a different race. You're too tall. You're too short. They just said, welcome. Because this place here is sacred. Let's never forget that. This is sacred where we are in a room called Alcoholics Anonymous. Chapter to agnostic is one of the most powerful chapters for me personally. What it has done for me and continues to do for me. Step one brought me to a place of willing to do anything, getting step one, dying of untreated alcoholism. My life was falling apart. I was literally, and I'm not giving this lip service, brought to death's door when I got here. 7 rehabs, getting locked up too many times, being homeless too long. My family was destroyed by this thing called alcoholism. We watch my mom die at the hands of this, and then I grow up and show up with this thing, and my family goes through it again. And after circumstances brought me to a place of willing to do anything, our book talks about when working with someone, that lucid interval. There was a lucid interval. I was at the bitter end where there was something in me that opened up. I now know that was God just opening up my heart. And I began this work with a sponsor. And I saw step one was the problem. Step two was the solution to this whole thing, that a God of my understanding was going to bring me to a place, this power greater than myself, of a solution, sanity, wholeness of mind. And at the beginning, the power was a group of drunks like this for good orderly direction. I found power in the unity of this fellowship. I found power in numbers. I would go from meeting to meeting to meeting. You know, listen to people. I would sit with the old timers, sit right in the middle of them, or next to them, or behind them, thinking that some of that time would rub off on me. I'd get it that way, you know, just anything. I made a decision in three to get to that power. What brought me to that decision? You know, step one. We often hear in AA, well, go back to the previous step. Nonsense. What is that going to do? What changed? Go back to step one where you had no reservations, where you weren't to go to any lengths. What changed? Well, I'm having a problem making amends, you know, and the sponsors go back to eight. That'll kill you. What is eight going to do? What changed when you showed up knocking on the door saying, sponsor, I will do anything. I'll make amends. I'll come to Iceland to make amends if I have to. You know, what changed? Go back to step one. How come there's reservations again? How come there's conditions on my sobriety? Ain't this God's deal? It was like that when I started. So I make a decision in three and willing to turn my life over to this God, and I clean house in four, share it with someone in five. I recently was able to sit down for the first time and do multiple fifth steps. Sit down with a couple of AA members and do this. My sponsor was one of them. And I was scared to death going through. That archway was getting, I was squeezing again. But in the discipline, there's freedom, I have found, to get right with this God. And you want to know something? I did this fifth step for the second time, sat down, got another ear, got another voice piece, got some new insight into me. And I was willing to sit down. I was in a meeting in New York City, willing to sit down in this workshop and share my entire life with this group. That's how free I got. As long as it wouldn't be in bad taste to some other people who were involved in that fourth step, I wouldn't do that. But I was willing to open up my entire life, and it got me freer. Great things about six and seven. I was sharing with someone earlier. What we tend to do, and I did it, when we get in here and trying to, well, I'm feeling empty. And I got to get to God. But I'm feeling empty, and I got to get to God. I'm feeling empty, I got to get to God. What do? We reach out there to fill up. Get the right girl, get the new car, get the right job, go to the gym, get the right clothes, whatever. Always reaching out to fill up. And some of us even develop some weird disorders over this stuff. I've heard it. But we're always reaching out. What we really need to do is empty out. In order to be full, get rid of all the things that are blocking me from this power. It's constantly, I found, about emptying out over and over and over again. I write inventory all the time. People tell me in AA, you're out of your mind, you write so much inventory. Guess what? I'd rather write and be free than to not to write and be untreated. Yeah. Because now I can go help others. I showed up with a spirit of willingness, willing to have God take whatever he thinks is necessary from me. Step seven is not so much about on my terms. It has nothing, very little to do with me. It's about having to do with being service to God and people around me. Changes are starting to happen as we go through this work. Changes start to happen. We start to experience the page 25, the spiritual revolution. Great promise on page 25. It starts to materialize somewhere between 4 through 9. Usually by that time we hit 9, the great fact starts to happen in our life. Deep and effective spiritual experiences. Incredible stuff. So when I show up with 8, after taking some of the information, the directions in 6 and 7, I have my list. I'm going to knock on doors. I've got a spirit of willingness. I'm willing to do anything. And I know when to stay away and when to go. And I clean up all the amends I'm consciously aware of. I had some wonderful experiences. A few were frightening this last time through the work with amends. And then we hit step 10, entered the world of the spirit. Great promise. Step 2 talks about restoring us to sanity. Step 10 says we got it. But there's some conditions. Our book is full of warnings and promises and lots of conditions. The condition is step 3, that God will provide us what we need, this employer, if we kept close to him and performed his work well. How do I know I'm doing that? Am I following directions? Yes or no answer. I don't need to be a brain surgeon to figure out if I'm doing God's will or not. If I'm following directions and I'm waking up, not asleep thinking I'm awake, but waking up, I'm doing God's will. It's usually when I'm sitting down with another drunk and saying, I'll take you through to work, I'll sponsor you. It's usually when I'm going home and trying to be a husband to my wife or a good son to my dad. That's when I know I'm doing God's work, because you know it. You know it in here. Step 10 talks about entering the world of the Spirit. We've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. And I continue to do inventory and set right any new mistakes as I go along. And step 11 talks about prayer and meditation. What this power will do for me once I've gotten to this place is incredible. And I'll close with this experience, because I know Chris and probably Myers want to get up here. But some really neat experiences that have happened to me because of the power I found in this room, and based on my track record, I don't deserve. When I was out there using, I would make these bargains to God. I lost my mom when I was a kid, and I said, if you make my mom show up, I will stop all of this. Make my mom show up. I just want to hold her. I just want to hug my mom just one more time. Just make her show up and all this will stop. Well, that obviously didn't happen, and I continue to die for a few more years. And I get sober by God's grace, 1988. And for some reason, shortly after I get sober, I decide to go to church and light two candles. I was moved one morning, go to church, light a couple of candles, and one was for the sick and suffering in and out of the rooms. And why I felt this feeling for sick and suffering in such an early time in sobriety, it had to be God. I was very uncaring about a lot of things, but I somehow identify with other drunks and was so passionate about what we do here. And the other candle I lit was for my mom, wherever she is. And so I'm doing this regularly through my years of sobriety. And I started practice prayer and meditation. I would sit in meditation. I would go to God with meditation, with questions in meditation. Lots of books I read have lots of great teachers give me some information on meditation. And what this God did for me was fix something for me that was always kind of gnawing at me. This loving God fixed something for me, put closure on something that has completely changed my attitude and outlook towards this God. About 9 years or so into sobriety, I'm sitting in a meditation, and what comes to me was I was on this by this ocean front, and what comes from the water is my conception of a higher power. And he walks towards me. And out of him, he appeared like where the water meets kind of the sky, like on the horizon. And out of him appears my mom. And they walked towards me, and I was an adult, and suddenly I became this little kid. And I remember her kneeling down, and that hug that I was looking for, she did that in this meditation. And I remember she stood up, and I stood up, and I was adult again, and she had these tears rolling from her eyes, but I was convinced that they were tears of joy, not sorrow. And I remember my higher power putting his arm around my shoulder, and in no words were spoken through this experience, but what his eyes told me was that she is okay, she's with me. And there was the most peace I've ever seen in my life in someone else's eyes. It was bliss, like the spirit, the great reality deep down within that all of us have. The spirit is bliss. Self is what causes trouble. He told me she was okay, and I remember my mom held on to me once more. And then what she did was she pointed off to the horizon on the left, and there were all these lights lit up, just hundreds of lights. And then she pointed off to the other side, and there were hundreds and hundreds of lights. And if you ever pass like a skyline or a city or see a picture of a city where all the lights are flickering at night, it looked like that. She held on to me. They walked away. They became one. And I came out of this meditation, and I was very moved by it and confused. And I called up my sponsor at the time, and I asked him, I shared with him this experience, and he didn't miss a beat. He was practicing meditation for years, and he said, how long have you been lighting candles for your mom? And I said, since I'm sober. And he said, she let you know she finally got them. She got all of them, every one of them. And I finally realized in that moment that God knew me, Pete Marinelli. He knew me. Which is a great experience for any of us when we're convinced that God knows us, who we are as an individual, and what's really important to us. And that experience completely changed my outlook upon this. I work with a lot of disciplines to stay in the I. That's the great reality, and away from self, which is the troublemaker. You'll hear people in AA saying, new people, I'm losing my mind, I'm doing this, that, and the other thing. And I'm saying, no, if you lose your mind, you'll be great, you'll be into the spirit, you're too much in your mind. You know, you're too much in your mind. You got to get out of your mind in order to get into here. What goes on in here is indeed the miraculous. It happens. And it's open to anyone who cares to have it. Thank you.
Man, I think some bitches got it. This is good. I'm going to start calling him Smooth Peter. This is great. This is great. I just want to add a little bitty piece to the end of what he was talking about spirituality. I'd been sober several years and not doing too good in the deal. And I was talking to this guy at a conference one time about spiritual stuff and how come it is that when I look at it in a room full of people that are doing the deal, their eyes look different, they hold their head different, they're just different. Why can't I be like that? And he looked at me a second like this and he said, Myers, have you ever heard of the second step proposition? And I says, no. And he said, well, you heard of the second step? And I went, yes. And he said, well, turn to page 52. It's different in your book. I just found out. But it's in We Agnostics. There's a line in there that says, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? And I went, okay. People have told me this before. And so he says, well, let me ask you the question then, Myers. Is God everything in your life or is he nothing? And I went, that's a no-brainer. He's everything. And he goes, oh, okay. So I just want to make sure I understand this. God is everything in your life. And I went, yes, sir, he is. He said, okay. Well, okay, let me just ask you the question then. This morning, how much time did you spend with God? You want the truth, right? He said, yeah, the truth would help. And I said, okay. I spent about 60 seconds as I backed out of the driveway of my house. And he just looks at me. I hate it when they do that. Damn, just talk or do something, but don't just look at me. And he just looked at me and he says, so let me see if I've got this right. I want to make sure that I understand this. God is everything in your life and you spent 60 seconds with him as you were backing out of the driveway. And I'm assuming that yesterday was the same drill, right? And I went, yeah. Because you see, it's as I back out of the driveway that life smites me in the face. Life looms large as I back out of the driveway. My day I see right there. And I get scared. And then it's time to say, God, you know, bud, and we have a little chat, you see? But this is ridiculous, you see? God wants us to spend time with him more than anything in the whole wide world, you know? It's like that old deal about you and your own dad, you know? You go to his house and he wants to spend time with you and all you really want is some dough and the car keys. I mean, you just want to... You want out of there, man. And he doesn't want to talk about anything in particular, does he? I mean, he just wants you there with him. Well, it's the same thing with the relationship with these gods of our understanding. Our God just wants us to be with him or her or what. I hadn't figured all this quite out yet, but you get my drift. You see what I'm saying? It's just the dangest thing. So if we keep that thought real quick and we go back to that second step proposition that we had to fearlessly face the proposition that God is either everything or is he's nothing. The funny part about it is that most of us tend to do this thing kind of weird. God becomes everything around booze and around drugs. But what about everything else? And this is where we get grindy. I mean, this is where it gets kind of funny because what happens is if you sponsor a bunch of guys, you see this all the time. They go out downrange a little bit. They get out there a little bit and they start living their life and things start falling apart. And then collectively we want to say, oh, well, this man just didn't do enough inventory work. He needs to go back through his four step. Or he didn't do his amends right. He didn't do... Well, let me add one more to the bottom of that list of things that we might want to check. It may be true. He may not have done any inventory and he may not have done any amends. This could all be possible of why he's not getting connected to God. But I would submit one thing, that my experience has been that most of the time, it's because of this second step proposition, that he has not accepted the fact that there is a loving God out there that will deal with all of his life, all of his problems. It's like, okay, God, I'm squeaky clean with you here, brother, and you're going to handle the booze, you're going to handle the drugs, but I got the job and the girl and the car and the stuff. You see what I'm saying? I can deal with the rest of this stuff. If you'll just deal with this hard stuff of the liquor, I'll deal with the rest of this stuff. Well, wait a minute. It doesn't work like that, you see? And that's why we get so twisted up. And that's why that without knowing it, we've set up this kind of wall between us and the God of our understanding. And it can be easily dissolved by just a simple deal of getting, drawing closer to God and listening to what God has to say in our life. And one more thing, and I'll shut up. We were at this conference. Chris was there. That conference is a men's conference in the middle of nowhere in Texas. And every place is the middle of nowhere in Texas. It's just. But anyway, you understand. And we get up in the morning and we're sleeping in these big dorms and there's like 16 guys in each dorm. And so I'm watching these guys every morning. I've been going to this conference for years and I'm watching these guys get up in the morning and some of them would slip out of their bed and kneel by the bed and they would say this prayer and then they'd go on about their business. Well, at breakfast, I guess I've been sober 3 or 4 years. I was in the middle of my half measures phase, okay, that we talked about a minute ago. So we're at breakfast and I'm thinking it's funny. I don't think it's funny today, but I thought it was funny. And I says, did you see those wusses that got up this morning and got on their knees? I mean, have you ever seen anything so girlish? I mean, it's just. Well, there's 20 people within earshot of what I just said sitting around this table. And you know what? Nobody laughed. Nobody thought it was funny. And I'm going, ha, ha, ha. You see? And I'm just kind of looking around like this, and I realize that this whole thing is really stupid, what I just said. And this guy, I love that man. I've never seen him since that conference, but I love him to this day because he looked at me and he says, could it be? And I know I'm in trouble. And he goes, could it be that you don't do this? And I says, no. And he says, you don't pray? And I says, well, sure I pray. Backing out of my driveway. I didn't tell him that, but I mean, I don't. But I had not experienced anything. Nobody had held me accountable to meditate or to do anything like this. And they just assumed that because I'm here, I'm going to do that stuff. Well, nothing could have been further from the truth because I'm so full of ego and arrogance, I'm not about to do this. And so he says, perhaps in the morning you might try this and see what you think. Yeah, right. Okay, so I did. The next morning I got up at 4 o'clock because I don't want to make sure, I want to make sure nobody sees me do this. I got a reputation to uphold here, you know? So I get up and I slip out of this bed and I get down on my knees and I say this prayer. Now, guys, there is nowhere on God's green earth that is more humbling for a man to be than on his knees. I'm telling you, I can't begin to explain. It was like somebody had stuck 220 right up my rear end. I'm absolutely... I say this little short prayer, and then I say amen, and I'm just sitting there, and I feel like I'm just jazzed to the max like this. I mean, I'm just like, it's the dangest thing. And I got up off my knees, and I'm looking around, and I'm wanting to go, you guys, wake up, man! You won't believe what just happened to me. Like, and I'm talking about it at lunch, and I'm talking about it all these other places, and I'm just telling all these guys what had happened to me like this, and. See, by submitting to a simple process, my ego and my arrogance are the biggest thing that separate me from the God of my understanding. You see, when I think I'm special, that's when I'm in trouble. You see, and so, in order to do that and to get on my knees, I took the ego and the arrogance out of the picture, and me and God could be there together, and it's been like that ever since. And so, what I'm submitting to you is that if your prayer life has gotten goofy, and if your prayer life is not productive, try going back and doing some things concrete, like get on your knees and say those prayers and concentrate on that meditation and this kind of stuff. My experience today has been, if you're having trouble in Alcoholics Anonymous or NA or CA, if you're having a hard time getting your arms around the coolness that is our program, submit yourself to more prayer and meditation and let God take you where He needs to take you. And it will flat blow you away. Thanks, man. He's not so evil after all, isn't he? My name's Chris Kramer. I'm an alcoholic. You know, there's a couple, whether they're talking and watching some of your faces, there's a couple of things that are real hard. I know some of you, when you got in the fellowship or started going to treatment, trying to get some help, you went to your family members and tried to explain this thing called alcoholism. And, you know, remember how hard it was to try to explain to them what this was about when they really had no clue, unless they were really one of us and they understood, you know? But it's like there's a couple of things that are almost impossible to explain, and being an alcoholic and an addict is one of them if you have no point of reference. And the other is the spiritual experience, and because if you've had it, it's like Peter was saying, words don't really matter. You know, you just look at something and go, huh? You know, it's like... you understand, you know, and it's like, and if you haven't had it, you can talk until you're blue in the face, and they're not going to understand what you're talking about. And I think this is what makes a lot of people uncomfortable in our fellowship, is because we want to talk about an experience we haven't had. You follow us? There are a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous today that have been sober a long period of time. Let's change the verbiage. There's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that have been dry for long periods of time, not drinking and drugging one effing day at a time, you follow us, that have never had the spiritual experience. And I'm going to tell you start talking about a spiritual experience in certain groups, and it'll flat irritate them. It'll flat piss them off because they've never had the experience, and that what they think is that you're judging. Oh, who do you think you are because you're so special? But you see, it gets us in a little cul-de-sac that we can't get out of if we're not careful, because the part of the hope that we share in this fellowship is our spiritual experience. And if we're in a place where we can't talk about that spiritual experience, then we're in trouble. Then what are we sharing? That's why we want to fall back on our stupid war stories and talk about the little pissing and moaning. I'm just having a bad day. Why would you, if you've had a spiritual experience, want to take up somebody's time talking about your bad day? You know, what I want to do, no, really, you've got to ask yourself, just like Myers said, you've got to ask yourself the question, you know, if God's the most important thing in your life, then why do you want to talk about anything else but that? But because it's this, in this connection with God, that the obsession to use lifted from me. It was in this place. The book talks about, in the doctor's opinion, it says we're irritable, restless, and discontent. And unless, again, we can find the sense of ease and comfort, we're going to go do it again. And then it says, strange as it might seem, once this psychic change, y'all with us? Spiritual experience, psychic change, same thing. Once this psychic change takes place, we're easily able to handle the stuff that goes on in our lives. It's like swimming upstream, guys. Any of y'all ever? No, y'all don't swim in anything, do you? Well, I guess you do here. I just can't imagine being in water this cold. You know, I haven't taken a shower in 3 days. No, I'm just kidding. Did y'all see I got a new clothes? I'm going to actually wear something different tonight. Just so y'all know, I didn't come to Iceland just like this. But they lost my bags in the airport. If y'all, some of y'all didn't know that. And I've been without stuff. But
we know it.
No, never mind. I know. Y'all steer clear. But this is the problem. Swimming upstream, you know, pretty soon you can do it for a while. And some of you guys are strong buckaroos. You can swim for a long time. But after a while, you get tired and it just beats the daylights out of you. Y'all know what I'm saying? You got God's will and my will. And as long as I'm doing my will, life's a bitch. Y'all, that's what we talk about it. I mean, in life, on God's terms, Peter said it a minute ago. I learned in treatment how to live life on life's terms. No, you didn't learn that in treatment. You've been learning that all your life. Now, what we need to learn, hopefully, is how to live life on God's terms. See, God tells me what to do, and I do what God asks me to do. And I'm going to tell you guys, it's just so much easier doing things that way. When I'm dead set, I'm going to make something happen, and I don't care who likes it. I'm going to make it happen. Well, you're going to come out the other side black and blue. You've just beat yourself to death trying to make something happen that hadn't. Some of y'all are, I'm going to tell you, I'll submit to you for your consideration. Some of you are doing it in your jobs right now. You hate your freaking jobs, and you can't make any money, but you're going to do it anyway because you think that's all that God's got in store for you. Do you think God's placed you in a job that you hate? I think you placed yourself in a job that you hate. Isn't that right? I think here's one that'll clear the room. Do you think God placed you in a relationship that you hate? Some of you guys, it's amazing. I sponsor guys like this. Well, we're back in therapy again. God dang, buddy. I mean, says, this is about the 15,000th fucking time you've been back in therapy around this. I mean, what are you trying to fix? Well, we're going to make this work. We're going to make this work. Let me just run something by you real quick. You know, just a consideration. Maybe it ain't supposed to work. Maybe you got into it based on selfish and self-centered motives, and you're trying to make this thing happen, and it ain't going to happen. You see, guys, life is not that tough. Life on God's terms is a pretty smooth path. And that's really controversial to say from the podium. And I'm going to say, some of you believe it's disrespectful for me to say that. They come up after a conference, we talk about this, and we're talking about spirituality. You make it seem so simple. You know, sometimes, you know, I mean, life's just a bitch. You know, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. See, but these are preconceived ideas. It's like thinking always inside the box. This is where I'm placed, so this is where I'm going to have to be the rest of my life. Except God gives us all the power in the world. Peter was talking about it. Lack of power has been my problem all my life. Not just around the alcohol and drugs, around everything. And then I get sober, and I have this thing called a spiritual experience, and now all of a sudden my life starts to simplify. Guys, newsflash. Let me be the first to tell you if you don't know. God's trying to talk to you. The channel is there. It's just blocked. You get it unblocked, and God will show you what to do in your career, with your health, in your relationship, your personal relationships, with your kids. God will show you what to do. God, everybody wants to make fun of that. Everybody wants to make a joke about that. What do you think God's going to do? Put a paycheck in my freaking lap? Not with that attitude, he won't. It's like Meyer says, the proposition has got everything or has got nothing. You know, and what, how are we going to come? Let me give you a quick story real quick. A couple little things. I went to, some of y'all may have heard this on tape or something, but you know, I went to my first wife. I finally tracked her down. She disappeared for 10 years out of my life. I was divorced about 5 years before I got sober, and I brutalized this woman. I watched her have a nervous breakdown in Denton, Texas, and I didn't even know she was having it. She got taken to a hospital in an ambulance, folks, just coming apart at the seams. And she was sober. You know what I mean? She just coming apart at the seams, trying to keep us out of the poorhouse, trying to keep me from, I'm driving her nuts, and bless her heart. And I, you know, over the years, and I got sober, and I tried to make amends, I tried to find her, and I wrote letters, and I couldn't track her down. I had a number of her brother up in near Houston, and I'd call this number a bunch of times. It had been disconnected. It was not the number. And so my sponsor and I were in Pasadena doing a little workshop, and I picked up the phone book because this cat lived just, I don't know, 20 miles from there. And so I picked up the phone book, and I looked down, and I says, I wonder if this number right here is his number, her brother. And I picked it up on impulse. God, let's do this. What the hell? And I picked it up, and I dialed the number, and I got her brother. Now, guys, I'm going to tell you, I'd called long distance trying to get that number forever. That number's been listed for years. Why hadn't I been able to make these amends until now? He said, Chris, I don't really think she'll talk to you, but I'm going to call her, and if she wants to, I'll give her the number. Best I could do. I gave her the number. Mark and I went. We did this little workshop. We did the talk. Came back about 10 o'clock at night, and my light's blinking. Dig in the hotel room. And I pick it up, and it's her, the message. And I called her cell number, and we got to visit. And the next night, it's this cold. I'm not really crying over this crap. Only pussies cry. At least one's from Texas, anyway. I don't know. And I went inside. There's no love lost over this. You know, guys, I needed to be out of that relationship. But the things that I did to her and the things that were left unsaid when I left that house, you know, and it's like we got a chance to sit down and have dinner. And I said, and she'd been in Al-Anon for years, folks, from the damage that I'd done. And bless her heart. And she had recovered in her own right. And she sat and she says, I know what you're doing, because I told her I need to make a formal amends to you for the crap I put you through. And so we sat down and had a great dinner, and then we talked. And I told her what I owed her amends for. I told her what I thought I felt I had harmed her. And she looked at me and I says, is there anything else that I owe you amends for? And she started crying. She looked at me in the face and tears come in her eyes. She says, Chris, you don't have a clue, do you? I says, you've spent 30 minutes making amends to me about external stuff. Now let me tell you what you owe me amends for. You with us? And she proceeded to tell me And I got my chance to sit there and cry because I didn't have a clue. We think we know. We think we know the way we hurt people. We think we know what we've done to our city here and to our society. We think we know. We think we know about. It's what you think you know is the noose around your neck. What you think you know is the noose around. What you think you know about this work is the noose around your neck, because it stops you from sticking your beak back in this book and learning what the truth is. What you think you know about the spiritual experience will stop you from having a bigger, better spiritual experience. It's contempt. I've had the spiritual experience. Oh, have you? Let me tell you. We'll talk about it again tonight, but I gotta say this, guys. Do you think for a second that we get this excited about the fellowship and about the program and about our lives because of an experience that we had 15 years ago? That was a wonderful experience. Thank you, God, for that experience. But guys, I'm excited about the experience that I've had this week with you. You think, I can't imagine what you think we think about you. You know, I mean, it's like I can't imagine what y'all think about us. You know, and it's like this. It's just, but it's been such a tremendously life-changing event to come up here and sit on this island and watch you guys interact with each other and talk about God and the steps. Now, if I think I know it all, then why do I want to listen to you? You see what I'm saying? I've learned so much from you in this short period of time that I've had with you. And it's just what a blessing this has been. Contempt prior to investigation. I got to say this. I hear it in the fellowship. I haven't heard it here yet. I hope I don't hear it. Please, I hope I don't hear it. But I hear it all over the states because I'm in the treatment center business in the industry. And anytime somebody starts to get excited, like in this halfway house with these little guys, and they're all lathered up about the work and their spiritual experiences and what's happening, and somebody will shoot them down. The first person that comes along, oh, buddy, what you're experiencing is the pink cloud. So y'all, I mean, I have no bigger soapbox than this. It's like you want to call it a pink cloud. This guy's excited, and for the first time, the obsession to use has lifted from him, and he's excited, and he wants to share that with you. And you sanctimonious son of a bitch want to shoot him down with a comment like it's a pink cloud. I wonder what God's thinking. I really wonder what's it. You know what it is? It's not a pink cloud. It's nothing. Is it temporary? Yes. The zeal, will it subside? Yes. Life will hit you in the face again and you'll have some low spots. But the good news is you'll also have some high spots and you'll go to a different plane and a different plane. I mean, it's like how free do you want to be? I think we can get as. There's no end to where these spiritual experiences can take us. But the first time you start getting it, somebody wants to shoot you down and embarrass you because you feel good. And I'm going to tell you something, guys. I think it's goddamn disrespectful. I think it's disrespectful for anybody to say that. In closing with this, I would like to share possibly a little piece of just observation on my part. The people that are talking the loudest about the pink cloud, the people even that even have it in their vocabulary, are people that have never had a spiritual experience. Amen. They've never had the spiritual experience, so they want to make fun of it. Guys, I'm going to tell you, this program is about having a spiritual experience, and you either have had it or you haven't had it. If the depression's still with you, you're not there yet. Bored, anxious, tense, all the spiritual malady stuff that we talk about. If fear is still running your life, you have not had the spiritual experience that we're talking about. I'm not saying that you haven't had some awakenings. I'm not saying that you are not making some strides. You're not there yet. Keep working the steps. Start looking at your program. Start asking yourself some hard questions, because I've said it a million times, God's grace is even and it falls on everybody. And God wants everybody to have the spiritual experience. Peter said it a minute ago. You know, we have these barn-burning spiritual experiences that Bill Wilson had, and some of you have had those experiences. I had dinner last night with some cats, heard a couple of people talk about their spiritual experiences. I'm going to tell you, that's barn-burning spiritual experiences that I heard. That's the real McCoy. But what about the educational? And everybody wants to let everybody off the hook. Well, you're probably going to have an educational variety of spiritual experience. How arrogant of you. Listen. Let me show you something. Oh, scheisse. Here. I got two cups here.
This is the full meal deal. This guy saw a vision of God when he first got sober and had a hell of a spiritual experience. You with me? The cup's full. You follow me? This guy, it took 2 or 3 weeks to get it, but it's still full. Which one's going to be life-changing? Both. 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 None's better than the other. They're different. They're not, but the depression's gone. The boredom's gone. The obsession to drink is lifted. Some power's flowing in. I'm feeling some real excitement about life for the first time. Some passion. Come on, guys. What we need in this world is some people with a little more passion. Some of you look like you're on Thorazine. You know, it's like, just this is what we want to try to get you guys to see. I heard a counselor the other day. We had a pissing contest up at the hospital. Listen, Chris, you're confusing these patients. You act like the spiritual experience is some kind of an event. It is. The book just said, if I don't have a psychic change, I'm going to die. Guys, a psychic change is an event. And when it takes place, you'll know it because you'll start thinking different. You'll start acting different. You will be different. Y'all understand? Your attitude towards life and the people around you will start to change. And that is an event. And it is to be revered because it happens very seldom. God's grace is there, but there's some things we got to do to get connected. You with us? I think most of you in this room are. It's an awesome thing to watch. Y'all got any questions about this spiritual experience? What you got?
Have you had a new term for it? Quantum change.
Well, now. The new term for the spiritual experience, quantum change. Yes, some of us poor uneducated slobs are going to be just shit out of luck, aren't we? You got something else you want to add? Peter, you got something else you want to add? Any other questions, guys?
There was one.
If y'all are on this side, y'all got to make noise. I won't see ya. You know, hey! You got a question? Somebody just threw somebody on the bus under here. I don't know. Just go ahead.
Ask you about your meditation. What's your experience with it? What do you do about meditation?
There was a couple of guys asking about this earlier, and I think everybody's going to be a little bit different. Some of us are more organized, and you know, our little regime is a little more disciplined. I don't know the right word for it. The problem is not meditating. Is not meditating wrongly. The problem is not meditating at all. You follow what I'm saying? I mean, even a half-assed attempt at meditation is going to get you someplace. What is meditation? I mean, what's the whole thing is about? Is to get quiet so we can hear God's word. A lot of you guys want to muck it up with a bunch of reading. I'm down with it. I understand it. If you want to do that, that's cool. But sooner or later, you got to shut up. You follow me? Treatment centers in the country spent you know, there's a meditation book on everything. Meditation for helpers, meditation for gay people, meditation for Jewish people, meditation. No, they're in. I can send you copies of all of them. It's just medication. I have one in the store now. Meditation for the sex addict. Meditation for the. For the bipolar individual, you know, for the duly diagnosed is what they call it. Duly diagnosed. I'm not sure what that is, but you know what I'm saying? But you can, there's meditations for all this, but people look at it and they think, if I read this, I'm meditating. You're not. You're reading. can you see that? But it's like, here's the deal. The Bible talks about it. And a lot of other spiritual literature talks about it. It's in the stillness that we know God. Y'all with us? Yesterday out there we were walking out. I couldn't tell you where. We were up in the mountains, and it's colder than hell up there. You know, and we're out there smoking a cigar, and it gets quiet. And I held back to take care of some business I had to take care of, and everybody's out walking, and we're all just kind of by ourselves on different places. And I'm there by myself in this absolutely breathtaking nature. You with us? Quiet. Now, guys, if you can't hear God's word in that moment, then you are truly blocked. I would say you are impacted. Maybe a fleet would help you out there. You know what I mean, buddy? I'm going to tell you, it's absolutely breathtaking. And that's where a lot of us find it in nature. A lot of us find it. When I got to this fellowship, I believed that meditation. I said, I can't do this meditation crap. One, I can't get my legs to fold in that. You know what I'm saying? Much less, man, the guy was telling me about, and much less do it naked. You know, I got to look down and say, no, I can't do this. I can't do this. Self-conscious enough as it is, and I got the little pee-pee stick, and I can't do it. And you light some patchouli, and you put some sitar music on, and you and this stuff. And listen, guys, and that's a form of meditation, and you can do that. But I mean, if that was it, I'd be dead now. I wouldn't do it. It's in the stillness. Get quiet with God. Sit up straight. Get quiet with God. We were talking, most of us meditate with a little timer when we first get started so that we don't miss appointments and stuff. Because sometimes, guys, when you go in these levels, when you go under and you start experiencing this stillness, you don't want to come out. And some of you don't, I mean, really, and it can be a problem. You go down. I'm not trying to get away from my body. I'm not looking for an astral experience. You see, I'm trying to get closer into my body. And as the voices, as the word comes to me about what I'm supposed to do with the day, whatever, I got a pen and paper next to me, and I write that down. I jot that down. You'll follow what we're saying? There's a great book out there Wally P. wrote, and I'm a big proponent of what the Back to Basics guys. If any of you want connection with that website or you'd like to order that book, we'll help you. But it's called How to Listen to God, and it's a book that talks about how we used to meditate in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous before we got good at it. You follow us? Now we're so good at it, we don't do it, you know? But just getting quiet and listen to the Word. Because, guys, bottom line, God wants to talk to you. God's got a message. God's trying to give you some instruction. So you got to get quiet so you can start hearing the Word. And if you're not hearing the Word, there's a reason. Something's up. Truly. And that scares some people. If you want to empty a room, start talking about spiritual experience. The topic, who's got the topic? Ooh, spiritual experience. Everybody gets up and smokes. Because so many people in the fellowship haven't had it. Other question? What you got?
Yeah, I want to ask you about prayer. I was wondering if you use preset prayers or if you just talk.
That's a purely opinion. I have some preset prayers. We do it in Alcoholics Anonymous all the time. Sometimes we want to hide behind the verbiage. We want to hide behind the word. It's like the steps, guys. Are we working the steps to be working the steps? Or are we working the steps to get connected to the power? Let me put it another way, what Mark talks about. Are you worshiping God? Or are you worshiping the power that is God? We get so tied up in longing prayers and how we do it. And it's just, we lose the sentiment behind it. What are we trying to do? See, we're trying to get quiet for a few minutes. In our prayers, God, let me ask you. My prayers are real simple. They used to be very long and simple. Thy will be done. Because the truth is, if I'm doing God's will, I'm in a great place. I'm a happy camper. Thy will be done. I just don't know what God wants me to do all the time. Make sense? I keep simple. Simple. Anybody else? No? Yes? Ten steps, something that I do, and I'll admit from the podium that I don't do it as well as I probably should. I stay so involved in the 12-step stuff, but the 10-step, there's some specific instructions. He's asking specifically about the 10th step. There's some instructions in there, what to do on arising, what to do at night to go to bed. I think one of the things that we don't spend enough time doing, there's some promises in there that talk about exactly what's going to happen as we do this work. They're phenomenal. I'll read them tonight from the podium. They absolutely will blow you out of the water, that stuff that's going to take place. It's another form of discipline again to get still. We went back to the dorm last night. I'd busted this foot and I was laying up, you know, dreaming of hydrocodone and Myers is sacked out and Peter's over there doing 10 step stuff. Peter's over there, you know, got the light on, got his book out, taking some notes, daily review. Absolutely. It needs to be done. That's exactly what this is about. I believe it's essential. Because I can get off the page so quick. Any other question?
What's ask you another one. How long time do you think you should spend with God in the morning and evening?
The longer, the better. I think it's directly proportionate. We were talking earlier. My grand sponsor, Paul Martin, he'll meditate an hour and a half a day. You'll do 45 minutes in the morning, 45 minutes at night. Some of you guys work for a living. You got kids. You know, you can't do that. Do the very best you can do. Do the very best you can do. But it's the same stuff. You know what I mean? Is God the most important thing in your life? Then let's spend some quality time with him. More than a couple of minutes, guys. Give them 15 minutes, but you've got to practice. Sitting 10 minutes for an alcoholic or a drug addict in early sobriety is like, you know, it's like me listening to Coltrane. You know, I'm not, I just can't do it after a while. You know, it just drives me nuts, you know, for me personally. But some practice, you can get it. And before you know it, you look up and it's been 30 minutes and you've got this connection. It's like unbelievable. Time will cease to mean anything in that place. That's why we suggest that you use a little timer. But it takes discipline. Practice. Just try it for 5 minutes at a time. Tonight, when you go home, make a point to set your timer and get quiet for 5 minutes. Clear your mind a little bit and say a little prayer and then get quiet and then practice and see what happens. Again, the same thing. The problem is not that we're meditating incorrectly. The problem is that we're not meditating at all. I bet you less than 5% of this room right here are meditating on a daily basis. I'm not even going to ask you to raise your hand. I'm just tell you, probably 5 minutes of you haven't sat down and got quiet with God in weeks. And you wonder why there's a feeling of disconnection. You're not even in the same room. You know, that's what that's about. Anything else? Good. Anything? Yeah. What you got?
When you meditate and you talk about that, the Lord is God. The question will hear the Lord is God.
And I didn't hear it. It was probably so great, it went right over my head. There's, for me and somebody else, they may want to share a little bit about that. How do you hear the Word of God? How do I personally receive the guidance? Here's what will happen. I have in my sobriety, and I'll talk about it some tonight, I have heard verbiage, Chris, don't do it. You know, I mean, I've heard absolute clear guidance. Stop. You know, a lot of times it's a little more subtle than that. A lot of times it's a little more. What'll happen is I'll get y'all know in the book where it talks about the intuitive feeling. You intuitively know how to handle a certain situation. That's the and I just and then all of a sudden the stuff will start taking place. If you'll get quiet with it and you'll start opening to the possibility that there's some guidance coming to you, what'll happen is you'll hear the guidance. It's like sometimes, it's like looking for rocks. Any of you guys are geology buffs and you want to go look for a rock, first thing you got to do is find out what the rock looks like. What are we looking for? And you see a picture of it or you see a sample of it, and then all of a sudden you say, shit, they're everywhere. They're all over. But before you were walking over them because you didn't know what to look for. That's exactly what this guidance for me has done. You know, it's like God's been screaming direction at me for forever, but I haven't heard it because I didn't know what I was looking for. I'm looking for a big neon sign, and it's a very, very small little note slipped under the door. You know, Chris, here you go. And then you get quiet, and then you start listening to this stuff. I'll finish meditation, and the phone will ring. And it's this some guy that I've been trying to track down. It's like, what is this? On a spiritual path, everything starts taking place. And you don't second guess anything because it could be real. It could be real stuff. And you start to, you get letters from somebody you've been trying to track down, or all of a sudden the job that you've been talking about, you know, it either opens up or it closes down. You know, doors start opening, doors start closing. That's the spiritual path. This is not this we're going to go live in a church stuff, guys. This is real life stuff. I'm looking for guidance. See, that's how I got to Iceland. That's exactly how in the hell did we end up here? No, I said everybody. I said you're going to Iceland. They go, oh, I've always wanted to go there. Why are you going now? It's colder than hell. And it's like, how did we end up here? The stuff starts falling. Stuff starts falling. I got to tell you something right now because I may not get a chance to say it tonight. We weren't supposed to be here to help you. For my own case. I'm not kidding, guys. I got here and got in that little sober house and watched a bunch of men trying to get well and watched a bunch of people in a fellowship taking shots out there for the name of this program, and it blew me out of the water. I go back to Texas changed. I go back to Texas with enough stuff to talk about for the next 6 months. And the next conference I go to, I'm going to be talking about my experience here in Iceland. You see, I'm not coming from a place of, you know, what I got to teach you guys. It's what you guys get to teach me. That's a product of meditation. That's a product of being open to the whole world.
I'm willing to take any questions. I just wanted to expound on what Chris had talked about in worshiping methodology. We can get so into worshiping the methodology that we miss why we're doing this in the first place. I would get so tight with having to read certain things in the morning, having to sit for so long, have to do certain prayers for so long. And if I didn't, I would walk out with this judge screaming at me, I wasn't good enough today. I didn't do the right practice today. And the best story I can explain with this is a friend of mine told me what happened to him. He was sitting in meditation, and he hears his wife calling from upstairs, can you come up and help me with something? And she called about three or four times, and he replied, God damn it, can't you see I'm meditating? So, you know, as I heard a guy in Minnesota say, we go in and in, we turn in order to go out, because if we don't turn in, we can't go out. But if we turn in too long, we better look out. You see, we get so tight with this stuff. My current practices, well, let me say this. What I do currently is I allow the Spirit to move me to read on certain days. There's days I'll read a few pages out of meditation books, and I'll go through that for weeks or even months. Sometimes I'll read page 84 to 88 out of our big book. Sometimes I'll stop with that. I'll read other material. Sometimes I don't read at all. I'll just sit with some prayers that I'm very comfortable with, prayers that have become very personal to me. And then after my prayers get done, I'll sit in a meditation. I try to do, I do twice a day, 20 minutes a day, and sometimes I'm doing three times a day for longer. I've been in meditation for quite some time, and I've been in a meditation for like an hour and better at times because of the experiences. And you get taken in meditation. There's lots of techniques to it. Just let the Spirit move you. See, in doing, we succeed. Never forget that. In showing up, we succeed. I'm willing to do this. And wherever the Lord, wherever God's going to take me, let him take me. The other thing I found out, if I'm not clear, I can't hear. What do I mean by that? If I'm blocked with self and all my attachments to things out there, you know what? I can't hear God. I think God wants me to do certain things, and then I'm finding out it's just not happening. I need to be clear. I need to be unblocked. And the deeper I go and the more experience I have with this power, my attachments to things out there, things that seem so important to me, are suddenly cast aside. They're not so important. Because as long as I'm attached to stuff out there, it will determine how I act, how I feel in here, and how I act towards you. Because there's an angle on everything. 12:12 talks about fearful of losing what we have and not getting what we want. So as long as I'm writing inventory and discussing it with someone and sitting in prayer and meditation and seeking to grow with this power, great things will come to pass for me and you. Our book promises us all of that stuff. Again, why would God deny any of his children his peace, his ease, and his comfort? Why would he do that? My God's a loving and caring God. He only wants what's right for me. So it's about getting out of self and getting into this great reality of the Spirit. There's certain disciplines. There's a condition on it. Chris, Myers, did you want to add anything? Well, in closing, let me just say this. Again, what Chris said, I watched a bunch of guys and watching a bunch of guys at the Sober House doing great things and carrying this message. And this has been an absolute joy for me to be here this weekend. And I thank you for my sobriety. Thanks.